Hey, Danger Dan Jurz here with a quick announcement. Our next interstitial bonus content will be Daniel's Power Rangers mini campaign, and it will be the final one before the start of Season 2 officially begins. It's a soft Season 1 epilogue slash side story that will be releasing exclusively on Patreon, with its first episode dropping Wednesday, May 27th. Stick around after the episode to hear a sneak preview. More details about Season 2 will be coming soon, so keep an ear out and enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to Table Talk, a show where I chat with other creators in the TTRPG space about how they run their tables. I'm Danger Dan Jurz, the GM and host of D&D Dark, and joining us at the table today is the CEO and founder of Arcane Circle, Mike. Hello.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. To get us started, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself, your history in the TTRPG community, and about Arcane Circle?
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, in terms of my own personal history within the tabletop industry, I've been playing the game for over a decade. I don't even count anymore. But no, I've been a player for a very long time, switched over to the GM side a little prior to COVID times, and been a professional GM and content creator running sort of actual plays for about 4 to 5 years, sort of give or take. Again, don't really count anymore. And I've been running Arcane Circle, which is our all-in-one TTRPG platform for GMs and players. I've been doing this for a very long time, and it all started with a level 2 fighter human.
It is much the same for me. The first character that I legitimately consider my actual first character, also a level 2 fighter human, did the Death House portion of Curse of Strahd as a one-shot. And that was kind of like my first little toe dip into D&D. I'd done a couple of other one-shots in a few other varying systems beforehand. All of those I had come into with character pre-gens. So I consider my first legit character a human fighter, level 2, kind of simple as you can get.
When I got started with tabletop, I did what I would like to call the poster boy of first-time player, which was I'm a champion fighter. And I got really lucky. The first time I started playing, I was invited to a work game. I was working for a company called Newegg, and I was part of their marketing team, and I was very close with one of their studio heads. They had a sort of a studio. They were making a bunch of streams and productions. You know, everyone within the industry or within that company was very much like, either you're a business person or you're a tech nerd. We're all nerds. And he was like, hey, man, you know, you do content and you do all this stuff on your own. Do you want to be part of, you know, my game? And I was like, yeah, of course. Never played before. And I was very lucky because that game lasted for 8 years.
Nice.
From level 2 to completion, level 20. And I was able to get a full. And it's one of those things where, like, now I'm kind of like, all right, I'm moving on from what I started with. And when I am able to play, which has become very rare because I'm now sort of subjugated to the forever DM seat. Whenever I do have the chance to play one shots, it's always like, I can't wait to play something else. And it's only now, after how many years have passed since that 8-year game has ended, that I'm like, I kind of wish. I want to be a fighter again. I don't want to have all these complexities. I want to just be a fighter again. It's going to be really fun. I have such a simple beginnings from TTRPGs, and it's kind of blossomed to where we are now.
That tracks very well with the community meme that everyone's first and final character is a human fighter after like running the gambit with everything in between.
There's something great about it. But I was doing that for a very long time, just being a player. And there was a certain point where I'm the type of person who always has to do something creative. During my time at Newegg, there was a period where I was in charge of their live streams, their gaming live streams. And I got really lucky to build a community and hang out with people and play games for a living, which was like, you know, the dream come true. And there was a certain point where I was able to express all this creativity unbound and just go off. And then there was a moment where my bosses were like, hey, we just can't do that anymore. We got to, you know, corporate America, we're sort of focusing now on numbers and less of community building. And I had to stop. And it was one of those moments that I kind of stopped and was like, man, if I'm not doing something creative, I feel like a zombie. And so I took the love of tabletop and how I was already in that game. I was like, I'm just going to start my own game. I'm just going to start my own home game. And I'm going to get some friends together. We're going to play. And, you know, even though we have lives, we're going to play digitally. We ran a digital game, and COVID hit, and we're like, well, we're already doing digital games. Let's go ahead and do it now. And it evolved into an actual play, and that evolved into me doing professional GMing. And then all of a sudden, I was like, you know what? There's a lot of spots that need improvement that I could see that can actually help GMs. And it's led my way here to AC.
Yeah. So on that topic, can you walk us through a little bit the different aspects of Arcane Circle, what your marketplace and platform does, and like what kind of tools you are bringing to the table with that?
Oh, yeah. So the main staple that we had in terms of like what we want to include in the AC ecosystem was, if we're answering this one question, if the feature we're providing helps a GM or helps a player, we want it. There are some limitations that we can't do. Like, as much as I would love to have some sort of like audio feature, like a Discord situation, we already have a lot on our plate. So what we're offering is, it is an all-in-one TTRPG platform. We have game discovery, so GMs can list out games and try to find players. Has player organization, template creation. When you make a game, we have the option for you to create a campaign wiki for that particular game and your players, which then you can share pages for even users to have like their own journals. We have a Discord bot that helps with notification. That was my biggest problem when I was running a lot of like one shots, was I was like, all right, don't forget everyone, we have a game today. And I was like, well, it'd be great to have a system that could do it automatically. And we have that. I've met numerous professional GMs who run 6 games a week.
Ooh.
Yeah. Shout out to Ron. You know who you are. Man, this guy's a beast. But it's almost necessary to have someone to assist you to like do session transcriptions and summaries. So we wanted to have a bot to do that. And we're in the works of releasing. I think we're, by the time this recording is happening, I think we're about a week and a half, maybe even less so, of a training module. So we were able to collaborate with a bunch of TTRPG creators, Dyson Autism, Vixie Bell, Buff GM. We were able to work with all these guys and a lot more. And we're building all these sort of videos and training videos to teach you about table safety and system specific training and tools. And you're able to, as a player or GM, go through that training module and kind of learn how to maybe be a better GM, be a better storyteller, and get badging for completing things. And I'm not even done yet. My CTO, brilliant man, Mike Harmony, shout out to him. He already has a skeleton of a VTT. That one's going to be on the back burner for a while, but we have it. We have the skeleton and muscles of a character creation feature. So you can also connect it to your Discord and you connect it to your account. So yeah, the whole concept is, whatever we could provide that will make your life easier without having to jump to 5 different platforms, that's what Arcane Circle is.
That's awesome. And like, with the breadth and width of niches that you're covering with that, that's a lot of ground to cover and a lot of technical know-how. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of logistically bringing some of those things together, and in setting up a venture like this, what were some of the hurdles that you had to jump over and ducks that had to be in a row for success to happen?
Yeah, I'm very much of that mentality and that person who goes, well, I don't like the way this works. I guess I'll just build my own Disneyland, or, you know, like one of those things. Like, I guess I'll just build my own casino. And I taught myself how to use Figma, and I started to do web design, and I started to build out each feature. I was like, this is what I want. And I started to visualize how each one looks. I have notebooks filled of draft ideas in terms of the way it sort of all came together and how it interacts. In the eyes of my CTO, it's very simple. I don't believe him. But then again, Harmony is a really talented person. He is an indie game dev. So not only he is experienced with web design, he's been doing it for a very long time, and web creation, he also knows how to integrate sort of like video game aspects to it. So he's worked with more complicated things. The way we did it was, we did a baseline of game discovery first, and then we started to build off of that. So we're like, okay, players find a game. Cool. How do you organize players? How do you organize sessions? How do you organize this? And we started to build on top of that. And then we started to expand. Okay. This talks to this, you know, character creation talks to this. Character, you know, so we're going one by one at the moment. And so far, everything looks okay.
It definitely looks like you've got a really solid foundation going. And I really admire your leaning on the expertise of the community around you. That's something that I've, to my own detriment, my kind of go-to philosophy for my projects is, I do not ask anybody to do anything that I am not willing to do myself. And so I kind of have to put in my own hours into a thing before I'm willing to hand it off. And only lately have I been more willing to ease off on that and let people who know better take more of a lead in things. And I've always been big on delegating and like having to divide and conquer. It's just kind of the limitations of my own time and mental space have really only recently started to cement in. So I very strongly admire anybody that has that kind of strong interconnected team and the ability to really branch and web out and divide and conquer and delegate.
I'm in the same boat. There's a lot of, I don't know if it's called millennial guilt or whatever, but it's like, you know, it's like, well, I can't ask you for help, but I'm going to do it myself. And when I'm really struggling, that's when I'm going to finally ask. And so it very was me for a while, just sort of in the very beginning, kind of drafting everything, getting everything situated, how each block was going to fit. And then finally I had to sort of break down and go, I don't know how to develop and I don't have the time to do so. And so I ended up reaching out to Carmody. And then it came to a thing where it was like, we were having numerous calls for talking to creators, AC Spotlight specifically, you know, talking to developers. We were able to talk to some amazing game developers. And I was like, everything's slipping out of my hands. I need someone to help me organize. And so I was able to add Amber Bracamonte, our COO, and I would be lost without my team.
To that end, are there any features that are kind of like a white whale for you for AC that is like an eventual end game goal, but so far is just kind of like a little bit too far out?
I would love to have a marketplace specifically that focuses more often than not than on indie systems. Not to say I'm going to neglect sort of the bigger dogs out there, you know, D&D, Pathfinder, whole deal, but I would love to have a lot more attention on indie systems. The reason why that's the big whale and that's sort of further down the line is because there's a lot of licensing that has to go about. There's a lot of like legalese that I have to talk to. There's a lot of like handshake deals. And right now, if you look at it from my original goal, which is like, hey, what features can I offer to help GMs? That's not technically helping anyone beyond just sort of maybe developers and ourselves. And that's not the focus right now. The focus is, okay, can we get a full version of our wiki out? Can we get a full version of our character sheets out? Can we get a full version of this out? Because that'll be helpful.
Yeah, I can completely understand all the legal hurdles there. For me, my personal thing for our show is transcriptions have always been a big thing for me from the beginning, and it's always been the thing that's been a little bit out of reach. Lately, that's gotten better because the technology has improved and it's been easier and easier for tech to kind of help bridge that gap. But I'm very particular about the way that I like things, and I've recently had to kind of check myself and be willing to step back and let the technology do the thing. We finished our first season of our actual play about a year ago as of this recording. It was an 80-episode, 2.5-year campaign, and as far as transcriptions goes, it's been me almost exclusively with a couple of other people on the team helping out here or there. And in the year that we've been done, I've got about 15 episodes transcribed out of 80. So I've kind of had to pump the brakes a little bit and reassess just because I edit the show. I am the primary GM. And it's just, there's only so many hours in the day. It kills me to have to put that so far on the back burner because it's so useful to have those transcripts and I love having them as an accessibility thing. But the more time that I devote to that, the less time I can devote to editing and producing the show and to GMing and like getting the story out there. And there's only so many things that I can juggle at a time. We experimented a little bit with putting out a call for volunteers and we were able to get one or two people to help out with one episode, but it's just such a time-consuming and monotonous process that it's a hard sell unless you got like a bunch of people to help out with it.
Yeah, it's once again sort of going back to the whole thing of like, if I can do it just myself, why would I ask you? But there's also sort of this mentality that I have in the same vein of like, if there's a monotonous, very kind of droll task ahead of you, that time put into it should be valued. And so I would imagine that anyone having to go through a 3 to 4 hour session and having to transcribe every word and maybe there's overlap of talk is that's a challenge, you know?
Yeah. And that's like the big limitation of the technology that makes it more necessary to have to like have a person transcribe is I try to go out of my way to designate who is speaking and to separate when it's player speaking and when it's character speaking.
Oh,
that's what the big tedium is. That's where the technology kind of falls short and where all of the time goes into. My basic process for that has generally been I would use technology to kind of like auto transcribe and then painstakingly go through and correct and separate out who is speaking when to say this player is speaking this player as this character is saying this thing. This sound effect happens in the background. It's been nice to have the finished product of those, but it's been proven to me more and more recently as I've been kind of like hitting my mental wall of being able to do that for my own sanity and like sake of time, I've had to kind of give up on that, at least for now. My plan is to eventually, if I can get enough of a framework, if there's like 7 or 8 people doing it, then it immediately becomes substantially easier. But for now, that's the thing I've got to kind of put on the back burner. But that is my white whale.
That's 100% fair. Yeah, it's one of the great things that I love about our bot that does transcriptions. And there's sort of a complicated feeling I have about it. But the great thing that I love about it is that because it is connected to Discord and each player can attach their Discord name to it, there is this lovely feature where if someone's talking, even if they're overlapping themselves, it's like a text wall. You can see that this person talked because the bot recognized that that account was talking, and it'll bring up the text and it'll bring up the next text and it'll bring up the next text, which I love that. My complexity when it comes to anything that works almost automatically is obviously, and this is where I have sort of a heavy hand into it. It's where I'm very hesitant to rely on automated and AI functions. My whole goal with Arcane Circle is obviously we want to be, the goal is to help GMs and players. And beyond that, to help the community as a whole. And relying on AI and utilizing of AI for Gen AI stuff is something that I don't want to do. The problem that I found is I tried looking into it. I think the old school audio text transcription services and software is like, it's so outdated and it's never kind of like promoted anymore. It's so difficult to find that the best thing you can find for audio transcriptions is sort of like reliant on AI, which I kind of like had to grit teeth and go, well, is it the best thing I can say right now is that, you know, it's limited to this, which is you're kind of forced into it, which is unfortunate. And it is helping, you know, it is an accessibility thing. So I've taken a punch, but I'm going with the roll. So
I feel that entirely. And I think that's kind of where the nuance has to apply a little bit in the difference between generative AI and procedural AI. It's a similar thing for me. Basically, every transcription software that exists and is mainstream is dependent on AI voice and chat recognition. And as staunchly anti-AI as I am, there's only so much that you can practically draw the line on, especially now. It seems to be changing, but
yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, like if a community member comes up to me and they're like, hey, I found something else, I would, you know, let's give it a look. But yeah, that's your white whale, man. I can definitely see that, you know, scraping the wall with a spoon. That's going to take you some time.
Absolutely. To shift gears a little bit and pivot towards your actual like game style as a player and as a GM, what are the different TTRPG systems that you've played, and like what stuff do you gravitate towards? I know you said that you're wanting to promote and prop up more indie systems. Are there any specific systems that are your comfort zone that you like or love to promote that you feel like should get more attention?
Blaze in the Dark is really fun. I'm part of a Blaze in the Dark campaign. I've been doing it for I think a year now. I also love Kids on Bikes. That's a really fun and simplistic system to really get into. And in terms of like indie systems that I would love to get more attention, I haven't had a chance to actually get into the system, but I was able to sit down with the creator of Coyote and Crow, Ken Alexander. And there's an aspect of her game that kind of blew my mind. And that was when you're doing character creation, you can give yourself faults, like a pet that doesn't obey you all the time, or you can have a family member who's a bit of a rival, and it gives the GMC these hooks to like really hurt you on your rolls. The question then goes, well, why would I want that? Because the more negatives you take, the more points you can put towards your character stats, which I was like, oh, that's so cool. That solves a few more things. One, it allows the GM to have a lot of hooks immediately just by your choice. And two, I love it when characters have faults. It is the best storytelling mode and sort of like scenes set, like, oh, you're not always the best. And so Kite and Crow, shout out to that. That's a game that has gotten my attention so hard, and I can't wait to get a game going.
That is awesome. I absolutely love it when systems mechanically incentivize imperfect play. It's one of the things that I've loved the most about the handful of Powered by the Apocalypse games that I've played. A thing that they do is that they tie your experience points to your failed rolls. That is the way that you get stronger and generate XP is by failing. You learn from your failure. And similarly, like you said, with Kids on Bikes, I love adversity tokens as a way to like really push yourself to make riskier decisions.
Fail forward.
failing forward is one of my favorite things in design. So right there with you. I love that concept for Coyote and Crow.
Yeah. There was another aspect of the game that, again, I was so lucky just to sit down with the creator. She mentioned that there was, much like in D&D, where you can like set your points to like whatever the minimum is to 20. There's a certain point if you go over an amount, I think it's 5 is the base of like what a human could do. Like that's your peak, your Batman. And once you hit over 5, which you can do, the entire world is then aware of you. So if you're really good at dexterity and you got like a 6 or 7, the surrounding towns and neighbors and everything else recognize, saw you do that triple, you know, barrel axe flip. And they're like, hey, that guy's unique. That's weird. And you start to become known. And I went, that's great. Cause that means as the players are progressing, the GMs can go, hey, mid campaign, you're now like a superhero. You're doing parkour off walls. There's now a rival who does the exact same thing, who doesn't like that. And it gives you another hook. I was like, oh, your game's full of hooks. I want it.
That is so fun. I was already interested in Coyote and Crow just from the general pitch of it being indigenous focused and underrepresented voices within the community kind of having a chance to shine. But mechanically, that sounds awesome.
It's so smart. It covers a few things and I can't wait to give it a shot.
So in games like that and like in those mechanical hooks that you're intrigued by, what kinds of aspects of those things do you like to bring into your own game? So like as a GM, what is kind of your bag of tricks that you go to?
I like to call sort of my style breadcrumbs and cookies. I love getting obviously my players involved in the overarching story, as it were, in the whole campaign. And I like integrating their recipe, their characters, and their backstories into what I like to call breadcrumbs, where I'll drop a little bit here, drop a little bit there, and kind of keep them trailing. And it won't actually resolve until they hit something big, which I call a cookie. Those are the big reveals. I love teasing something 50 sessions down the line. A great example is I had a player's very early game. They started off level 3, and we were session 2 in the campaign. And they met pixies who were like, we were chased away from the Feywild from a fey giant. And they were like, oh, that's horrible. Yeah, but we were saved by this family. Oh, okay. And I think they're now 70 sessions in and they're in the Feywild and they must have forgot about the fey giant, which I was hoping for. And I was like, and then you get captured by the fey giant, you know, circumstances be damned. And they're like, wait a minute, why does this sound familiar? And I'm like, ha, 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 here's your cookie. And now you get it.
That's awesome. It's fantastic when that can happen. For my general play style, I tend to, it's hard to say because most of my experience as a GM is in actual plays, which I feel like is kind of a different focal point in structure. But the characters are very heavily centered in the stories that I tend to run, which I know there's a lot of standard advice saying, hey, don't do that. Because if this player no longer can make it to the table and you've made that character load bearing, now you got to work around that. But I see that as a challenge, and I find the most interesting TTRPG experiences come more player centric than GM centric. So I love being able to make the characters pivotal to the story. Whether they are important to the world or not is kind of subject to debate, but at least in the events of the story, if it doesn't tie into the players, I tend to feel like it's a bit of a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
So I love doing that. I describe my own style as being very pulpy and fast-paced. What I consider my strength is what I call hype moments.
Oh.
I will basically get like a snapshot image in my head of a specific moment that is cool as all hell that I want to get to, and then we'll work backwards from there retroactively to set it up and make it happen. So those kinds of things kind of bleeding into each other are like my general style and sensibilities. I'm also very collaborative, which I'm sure is the same for you and most of your group. A lot of the Arcane Circle GMs have very collaborative, very roleplay heavy, very like loose in their structure, in their tags. So
yeah.
I'm sure that is a very common sentiment among your community.
Yeah, I think as much as I would love to take that, it very much is a sentiment, I think, just as the TTRPG community as a whole. Shifting back to sort of the AC Spotlight interviews, one big question I love to ask people is, what is a rule you have at your table that's set in stone? And that's mainly because I've been kind of made very well aware that most creators and storytellers generally start to lean towards the rules of cool rather than the rules as written kind of structure. I think it's very indicative of the actual community as a whole that we are here just to tell a story and make sure everyone is having fun. I've been very, very lucky because I have seen like Reddit horror stories, but I've been very lucky that most of the GMs I've spoken to and people that I've interacted with have been people who are good natured, want to tell a story. They don't want you to cry. Like they're not aiming for make you have any sort of trauma, but they'd really love it if you did. I've described GMs as emotional vampires. We can't wait for you to feel something so we can just suck that up.
Absolutely. That's a very interesting question. You've got my wheels spinning. I will toss that back on you while I think upon that. What is your immovable rule?
Oh man, you know what? As much as I've been asking people that question, no one has asked me that question. I think my rule is respect is not optional.
Mm.
I think respect has to be mandatory. It's one of those things where if you know you're about to come off as disrespectful, or if you do come off disrespectful and someone calls you out on it, there needs to be some transparency and communication. I have had players in parties who argue with each other. And at the very end, I'm like, you guys are right. And they're like, no, don't worry about it. We planned this. We knew we were going to argue with each other. We're going to get really up on each other's throats. And I was like, so this was cool. They're like, yes, we loved that we had a fight. And I was like, okay, cool. And there have been other moments where I've had players who feel like they've been left out. And that feeling comes out as being upset, agitated, and almost defeated. And it does have to come up where we all have to sort of sit down and go, listen, here are the reasons why you're not being targeted. And there needs to be communication. There needs to be an understanding. But all of that comes from a place of respect. We recognize that someone doesn't feel safe or doesn't feel acknowledged. And we all have to come together to provide context and do signify that they do matter. But yeah, respect has to be mandatory.
It's a very pragmatic rule too. For my answer to that question, I generally operate on a law of equivalent exchange.
Hmm.
So both between like player and GM, player to player, in how I operate, I try to have an even flow going across all directions. I, as a GM, am willing to budge on most rules if a player is willing to meet me halfway. I'm very willing to bend rules as long as we don't break them, and will try to compromise with my players on anything. A lot of the times when a player asks me a question that is blatantly against the rules, I will try to get to the heart of, what is your goal here? What is the thing you want to do? Let's find a way that we can meet in the middle where we can do this without breaking the rules. You still get the outcome you want, just maybe not with that same method. Or like you said, with some players feeling neglected and others kind of hogging the spotlight, the way that I've structured our actual play is I try to do basically every character kind of gets their own focal story beat.
Nice.
I have them centered almost like anime arcs. I will have like, this is your character's subplot and like your character takes the spotlight.
Oh dude, we came from the same plot here. I've structured most of my games the same way where I've told people in session zeros, I'm like, everyone here gets two arcs. All right. So if you don't think you've gotten your arc yet, that means you're at the very bottom of the list. Don't worry. You'll get an arc. Okay. Everyone gets a focal point.
Everybody gets their opportunity to be a badass and to like have their big story moment. I just usually will focus them one at a time, but I try to give everybody equal attention. If not in the moment, then structurally, I will try to counterbalance that. There's definitely a couple of characters in our season one who are very backloaded in their importance and prominence within the story, but a lot of that just kind of comes down to the dynamic of the table. And they, at least from what they've told me, they were very satisfied with the arcs they eventually got. And because they did come so late, there was a lot more weight and heaviness and momentum. And like the stakes were a lot higher for those ones. So it felt like a good compromise there. Compromise is kind of my general headset there. There's also a bunch of different house rules that I do are ways to kind of equalize spotlight and like the power dynamic between GM and players. One of the like core signature homebrew rules that we did for season one was Devil's Bargains.
Oh, that's a Blaze in the Dark thing.
Yep. Where if any player fails a role that they desperately need to succeed, or an enemy succeeds a role they desperately need to fail, they can petition the GM for an automatic success or the enemy's automatic failure, and then I, the GM, get a back pocket nat one that I can replace any one roll of theirs down the line with. So trading instant success for eventual failure.
I started to implement Blaze in the Dark features as well into my games as of late, especially when it comes to like downtime, where I'm like, yeah, you can totally get proficiency in these particular tools if you want. During downtime, each week counts as a you having a chance to roll some D6s based on your skill modifier. And if you get double sixes, which is a crit in Blades in the Dark, hey, you get proficiency. But it's building up a clock. I love that the Devil's Bargain is so much fun. I've implemented a few times where even players are like, can I get a Devil's Bargain for like advantage? I'm like, yes. And then I get to pull something.
Yeah, I love taking things from other systems and kind of retrofitting them into the game. This isn't like a system specific thing, but there's another homebrew rule that I have not implemented in my games yet. But as soon as I heard about it, immediately, like, oh, this is an obvious one that I need to do from here on out. In combat, when a player lands the killing blow, they can choose to narratively designate that final strike to a different player if they so choose.
Oh, that's nice. That's real cool.
So if narratively it would feel a lot better for this other character to have gotten the final hit, they can designate that, no, this character actually gets the final blow.
No, that's a good role. Yeah.
So there's a lot of things like that. I love things that encourage and incentivize that kind of group collaboration and that kind of level the playing field between GMs and players. So equivalent exchange.
Might have to use the same.
You did bring up your AC Spotlight interviews. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the information and some of the wisdom that you've gotten from doing those interviews? And if there's any like particular bits of advice that really stand out to you?
Yeah. I mean, out of the 20 something odd calls and talks I've had, I've been kind of blown away with all the creativity from, you know, sort of the love out of the system and tabletop in general. Even though there's like similarities in some of the talks I've had with where people have like the same mentality in terms of respect and how they started and where their brain goes when it comes to creation and sort of the advice they provide, I think there's a piece of advice that's been enforced time and time after again that kind of is always enforced when I talk to people. And that is, don't be afraid to tell your story. Who cares if you run Strahd and everyone else has run Strahd? It's a time-honored tradition. You got to do it. And even if they run it to death and people have posted online of my new Strahd campaign and, oh, is it not original? No one can tell a story like you can. I'm pointing to the camera that's not seen. No one can tell a story like you can. Also, audio is way better than video, is kind of what I grabbed. There was a breakdown that I had from Alessandro from D20 Workshop. He has this long, extensive family history where he grew up around creatives and this is his input. And that was really interesting. And I think anyone who's like wants to see how family can kind of sway your creative methodology should definitely check out that chat. If you really want some great advice on world creation, especially for new GMs, go check out the chat with Sphinx from the Everbright Archive. He brought some amazing tips when it came to world building and world creation and implementation of your characters in those backstories. There's a lot of ways to sort of learn from him. And I think I have a favorite, and that's only because I'm biased, because I'm lucky enough to chat and play with these people. I've done so in the past. That's Dyson Autism and Vixie Bell. I've been able to play and chat with them kind of extensively. They're talented individuals filled with stories. So please check out those chats. And yeah, I think those are kind of like my top four. If you want one more, I'll throw in is if you want an interview that caught me off guard, and that was Eleanor from Harlequin's Hallowed Hearth. She caught me off guard because she was like, she explained where her interest in TTRPG started. And I was like, that's mine and nobody talks about that. I was like, oh my God, I found another person. I didn't realize that we all exist.
That's awesome. I'm sure you're very similar to me in that you learn something new from each interview that you do. I'm very lucky in the interviews that I've done to have had like a really wide range of experiences to pull from. I love how varied the different ones that you've brought up are. I've chatted with GMs, I've chatted with showrunners, I've chatted with game designers, and there's always something that I can take away from each of them. There's a lot of like really good little nuggets that I've distilled from a lot of them. Some of my favorite ones are the ones that have like really broadened my perspective. One that I tend to point people to from our table talks is I did an interview with The Infinite Tavern, which is a show based in India. And I got to learn a whole bunch about the Indian TTRPG scene and how like relatively new the hobby is over there. And that was a really interesting and fascinating perspective shift. I also got to talk with Neil from Fey Earth, who is from Scotland and is doing a master's degree on folklore. And basically, Fey Earth is like a system and a compendium of monsters that are based in fairy and Feywild type folklore that is rooted in like the actual traditions of Ireland and Scotland and a lot of like Eastern European. And so that was so interesting. He had a lot of really cool and interesting tidbits about monsters that are things that really fly under the radar because of like a lot of our assumptions come from media, and he was going straight to the source for a lot of them, and how much they have shifted and changed with time was absolutely fascinating. Some recent other good ones that I've done. I recently interviewed not all, but most of the GMs from the Dungeons and Cabins event, and each of them had a lot of really interesting things to say. I particularly really liked the interview with Sammy, who is the founder and head of Dungeons and Cabins, getting into a lot of the logistics of setting up an event like that. It's basically like a D&D in a castle type thing.
Yeah.
But in the woods of San Bernardino Mountains, where it is a weekend doing summer camp activities and a 5-session D&D game where the camp activities affect what happens on the table.
Oh, that's clever. I love when unique culture beyond my own sphere, because it's unique to me, obviously, not to everyone. But when someone from a background that I don't generally interact with a lot is able to like, I'm able to sit down and talk to them. A good example is I've spoken to a guy named Dre. He runs Rumble Roll. He has such a love and passion for his Filipino background. He has a whole like history on there are monsters that were created, these like boogeyman like tales that were told in the Philippines from colonizers who would like tell them these sort of stories just to scare them and to like dissuade them from doing certain actions. Like there is a hurtful history. And so he took them and he was like, I have an idea. Let's own it. And so he ended up grabbing a lot of these sort of concepts, taking the, you know, the monsters and making them actually like a thing that can happen. There's one of my favorites, which is a bisected vampiric woman named the Manlagal.
Oh,
and it could separate from the middle and kind of fly off in different areas.
I know about that one.
And I went, that's so rad. And he goes, yeah, it came from a hurtful place, but we were able to sort of grab it. And they mentioned, they're like, we're not the only ones, but we're able to sort of do the same of grabbing the sort of thing that had this one concept and now we've built it to sort of be our own. And in terms of like finding people who have a unique background to us and bringing in sort of these new monsters and ideas and cultures and, you know, sort of, you know, how they can integrate in your story is just so refreshing. It's so exciting. And it's kind of tying in again, why I love like Coyote and Crow, why I'm really excited to sort of learn that. There's a lot of these unique ideas that I want to be exposed to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Before we run out of time, I want to throw this back to you and make sure that if there's any miscellaneous things that you want to cover, any topics that are important to you to hit, I want to make sure that we get a chance to cover them.
I will end it with the same advice that I got, you know, sort of been instilled for a while. And that is, there was a certain point in the TTRPG community that I saw that there was a lot of like sort of banter back and forth, whether or not an actual play should exist or not. And I saw that and I did make a video of that on my own sort of actual play channel. And it was sort of this is, you should be able to be free to make your stories. If you have a story to tell, go do so. Keep, though, in mind that respect for both yourself, for your players, and for the audience, if you are producing something for, you know, for the general public, is there. There needs to be a respect on all fronts. But beyond that, go make your stories. Be creative. No one can tell a story like you can. It's a sort of a phrase that I die on is, if you feel like you're unsure whether or not you can tell a story well enough to be consumed by the public, if you've ever made your players feel something, if you've ever made your players feel pissed off at a villain, or you made them sad at the loss of a favorite NPC, or you made them laugh at a silly joke character, you were able to make someone feel something. And that means you're ready. You're ready to start telling stories. You're ready to sort of put yourself out there. And even if you still go, well, I'm not entirely sure, hey, take your time. It's fine. But here's me telling you, I think you're ready.
Absolutely fantastic advice to end on. There's a story for everyone and there's an audience for every story. So I love that advice. And I think that the hobby and the community is only improved by more people sharing their stories and experiences. There's so much that I learn from everybody that I listen to, everybody that I talk to, and my games are improved the more that I experience others. So I can only imagine that it's the same for a lot of our audience and a lot of like fellow creators. So on that note, can you remind us one more time where our listeners can find you, your projects and your platform, your actual plays, your games, Arcane Circle? Go ahead and give all those links now.
Absolutely. So if you would like to find your own game or host your own game, you can do so on arcanecircle.games. We have a bunch of tools currently up and coming in the pipeline, as well as some that are already released. As I mentioned before, we have our transcription bot, we have our campaign wiki, as well as a bunch of organizational tools utilized there. But please stick around. We have a lot more things coming. Most socials are Arcane Circle or Arcane Circle Games. Don't worry, you can always go to arcanecircle.games and the links are there in the bottom. If you're looking for me personally and sort of the work that I do, specifically for my actual play channel, it's called Arcane Focus D&D. Yes, I like the word. I know.
It's a good brand name.
And you know what? It's all part of a family now. But yeah, so Arcane Focus D&D, it's an actual play channel that honestly I just started to do because I like creating stuff. I was not expecting to have the availability to, you know, work with so many good creatives and so many amazing people. So maybe you'll find one of your favorite creators on our channel one day, and that's really fun. But please go check us out on that channel or Arcane Circle. We're available all the time. I'm chronically online. You can always reach out to me.
All right. Thank you so much for all of that. All of those links will be in the description. And thank you again for coming by to chat with me. I feel like I could keep going for hours. This was a ton of fun.
I know. I could too. Honestly, it was one of those things where it's like 3 days ago. I was like, I might have a hard stop. I'm sorry. I usually like to keep it open, but I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
And thank you to all of you for listening. One more time, everybody. I'm Danger Dan Jers, the GM and host of D&D Dark. I've been chatting with Mike, the CEO and founder of Arcane Circle, and this has been Table Talk, and I hope you enjoyed what we brought to the table. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Table Talk, created, hosted, and edited by myself, Danger Dan Jers, with artwork by Jordan Nelson. Our guest this episode was Mike from Arcane Circle. Links to his work can be found in the episode description. If you're interested in being a guest on this show, reach out to us at dndarkpodcast@gmail.com. Our theme song and outro were created by Jeremy Vellucci. Check out more of his works on Instagram at jeremyvellucci_wreckoftime. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time we have a guest take a seat at the table.
Hello and welcome to Super Stryford Regency Rangers, a comedy action adventure loosely based on Sentai and Sensibility by 9th Level Games and starring some of Stratford's most colorful creatures.
You may call me Adrien Alucard Depeche. If you know what my father did, it could be bad.
Looking matronly with her face hidden behind a fan stands the Kuchisake Ona. Doesn't everyone think she's beautiful?
My name is Sir Gordon Topham Hatt. Pleasure to meet you. I like to make stuff go boom.
My name is Richard Milo Renfield.
He's back.
No, he's just still like that. Oh, God.
Hi, I'm Jordan, and I play Frederick the Loafer.
Oh, my God. Is this the dude that was like in that one episode of D&D Dark?
It is the deepest cut of inside jokes that could be made. God.
Are you married, miss?
I am not married.
Kuchisake leans immediately to the group, just pulls a quick huddle. We need to get this trollop out of this fucking town.
We go fight?
I meet you at dawn tomorrow morning.
It's date.
I hope to find love like that someday.
She says that I hit her. I did not hit her. It's not bullshit. I did not. And as you're walking, he just keeps following you.
Oh, God. I believe I have made an unfortunate ally.
On his hips are two pistols, on his back are two rifles, and on his chest, a triple barrel shotgun.
Oh, my God.
I will destroy all of you and destroy this town.
D&D Dark presents Super Stratford Regency Rangers, premiering Wednesday, May 27th, only on patreon.com/DNDarkPodcast.